Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah, stand up and shout. Welcome to Van Radio Show, coming to you each Monday and Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Black Books Rock. We are more than just a niche, we are a movement, says Ella Curry of EDC Creations. Prepare for the most stimulating conversation on the planet. Sit back, relax, enjoy another mind-blowing literary experience. Give the gift of knowledge. Put your hands together for your host, Ella Curry.
Hello, and welcome to Band Radio Show. I'm your host, Ella Curry. Tonight we have a special showcase discussing two amazing international best-selling books. Edward Kelsey Moore will be on the show live with us discussing Supremes and Earls All You Can Eat and his newly released bestseller, The Supremes Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. I am so excited about this interview. These are two of the best books I've read this year. I think because I am from a southern state and I grew up around a lot of seniors and I got to experience their love, their hate, their rants, I think that's why I can relate to this book so well. You're going to love these two books, and I am looking forward to the interview with Mr. Moore. Allow me to introduce you to Mr. Edward Kelsey Moore. And once again, he's the author of The Supremes Sing the Happy Heartache Blues and the New York Times and international bestseller, The Supremes and Earls All You Can Eat. Edward's award-winning essays and short fiction have appeared in the New York Times and a number of literary magazines, including Ninth Letter, Indiana Review, African American Review, and Inkwell. He currently writes a series of essays for Minnesota Public Radio. In addition to his writing, Edward maintains a career as a professional cellist. So join me in welcoming Mr. Edward Kelsey Moore to Band Radio. Hello, how are you, Mr. Moore?
Hello, Ella. I'm great, and it's great to be talking with you.
So tell me, how do a professional musician or artist becomes an international best-selling novelist?
Well, it's a long story. I'll try to make it the short version. I have always wanted to write, and when I was a little kid, I wanted to write. Even before I really understood what it meant to be a writer, I didn't see a way to get to that goal. You know what I mean? I sort of I wanted it, but it didn't. I might as well have said I wanted to be Santa Claus. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And but along the way, a path to being a professional musician did present itself, which is, you know, probably more unlikely when you think about it. I certainly didn't grow up in a family that listened to classical music, but that path did appear, and I started playing the cello when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and all of a sudden, people kept saying, oh, you're good at that, here's the next step, and here's the next step after that, and the next step after that, and so the path was laid out for me. I didn't have that path laid out for me as a writer, but it was always in the back of my head that one of these days I would do it.
And a lot
ultimately,
of people. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
A lot of people write books, but a lot of people don't publish the books. How did you go about getting it once you wrote the book, getting an agent and getting it published?
Well, I had a lot of luck. I what happened for me was that I went to a writer's conference, and I felt that I needed to get better. That was my goal, has always been and continues to be, to just get better. And I felt that I had some real problems with the novel I was trying to write. And I was in a writer's group, and they were not that thrilled with the novel I was writing. And I thought, well, I'm going to go someplace that can help me. And at the time, back when I was still making my living as a cellist, and that means that I had limited financial resources, I found an affordable writer's conference one summer, and I went to it. And I got very, very lucky that the woman who taught the class was not only a fine writer, but a really wonderful person, and she thought that there was something there to what I was writing, and she gave me a lot of help. And she ultimately, there were a lot of, false leads and wrong turns along the way. The novel got rejected by a fair number of people. But this writer who ran the workshop ultimately connected me with the man who became my agent. And that was how it happened. He sold the novel quite quickly, actually.
That's amazing, because, most people have 25 rejection letters, and 10 years later, the book may, actually become published. That's astounding. And then to go on and become an international bestseller with your first book is phenomenal. And by the way, your publisher sent both books, and I read them in like 2 days. They are phenomenal. I can't say enough about how much I enjoyed the books. So let's talk about the Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat first, and then we'll move into your new book that just came out just a few short weeks ago. So tell us about the Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat, your main characters, and what's going on with them?
Well, the three main characters of the Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat are Odette, Barbara Jean, and Clarice. And they've been friends since they were young girls in this small town in Indiana. And Odette was the one who came first to me. She's the basic story of her, or her birth, is that I was having a conversation with a friend of mine one night, and we were just, having one of those long conversations that you have with an old friend, and the conversation's winding around and around, and we somehow got into this topic of who is the bravest person you've ever known. And it ended up that for both of us, the bravest person we'd ever known was a woman. A different woman for each of us, but both of us thought a woman was the bravest person we'd ever known. I should mention, I always like to mention when I say this, that both of us, myself and this friend I was talking with, are both black men who had great fathers. It wasn't that people, I think, often assume if a black man admires the strength of a woman that he didn't have a decent black man in his life. That's certainly not the case for me. But this friend and I both agreed that the bravest person we'd ever known was a woman. And I started thinking about that, and that ultimately led to this character. I started thinking, what would it be like for a woman who was not capable of feeling fear, or at least was perceived as not being capable of feeling fear? And how would the people around her react to her? What kind of marriage would she have? Would she have a marriage? What kind of friends would she have? How would the world view her, and how would she view the world? And that character that I thought of ultimately became Odette, and the other things flowed from her. And then it became a story about friendship, about how people accept their friends for who they are and know each other in ways that even our romantic partners don't know us.
Amazing, amazing. So now tell us about her friends. And I'm saying that laughing because when I was reading the book, I thought about my five friends, and I tried to place us into the story. So tell us about her friends.
Well, her friend Clarice was her friend first, they meet in kindergarten, and they become very good friends, even though they're very, very different. Clarice is from a very strict religious family, and she's a gifted pianist. She's a prodigy, and she's put that away to be the wife of a very demanding and difficult husband, and to raise her children, and to be all the things that her mother has taught her are the important things to be. And she ultimately ends up having some problems being in that role. And Barbara Jean is a very beautiful woman who is prized by the people around her for that beauty and not for much else. And she finds herself a young widow with a relatively young widow with a lot of money on her hands and still the same problems that she's always had in her life. But the three of them together are this incredible force, and they're able to help each other do almost anything. And that was sort of the backbone of both novels, really, is how this friendship sustains these three women.
So how did you come up with the name for them, the Supremes? I think it might have something to do with music legends.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there's two reasons for that. You know, I love Dinah Ross. I just have since I was a kid. And, you know, I think just about anything I create has a little bit of a memory of being a little kid and watching Dinah Ross on TV. Also, I think, you know, a big part of this story takes place in the past, in the 60s. And these three women in this town are inseparable, and it was a natural thing for one of the characters to start calling them the Supremes and for that name to stick.
I could really relate to that, the Supremes. I remember when I was small, my mom had three best friends, and they hung out a lot, and we often teased and called them one of the names of one of the music groups that was, you know, out in that day. So that was that's really cute. Now, every Sunday, they would, after church, they would go to Earl's All You Could Eat. It seems like Earl's restaurant was pretty much a character. It became important as one of the characters in the book.
Oh, yes. I think a lot of people have an Earl's in their life. When I was a little kid, I know that a lot of times after church we would go to a buffet, and a lot of people from the church were there, and it was a, sort of an extension of the service, the social hour, you know, after the service. I think a lot of people have had that experience in their lives.
I go right now we have a neighborhood restaurant, and it's called Mid-Atlantic, and the whole church, all the churches in the area turn out, and everyone is sitting there chatting and looking around and just having a good old loud time.
So you understand.
Oh, yes. And I think a lot of people will. And that's what makes the book so enduring, because a lot of things you can relate to in your own lives. And I just cuddled up with this book, and when I got to the end of The Supremes, Earl's All You Can Eat, well, I knew I had the second book, you know, laying on my bed. But I just felt like, oh, my, you know how you visit your family and you have to leave and you had such a good time and you sad that you got to go. That's how I felt. But thank God I didn't have to wait a year to get to the second book.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. That's really kind of you. I really appreciate that.
So now we're moving into The Supremes Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. Oh, my goodness. All these life lessons about love and loss and life. Oh, my goodness. I want to get the audio version. If there's an audio version of this, I want to get the audio version, because I just want someone to read it to me, even though I read it myself.
Well, there is an audio version. There is.
I'm going to get it because this is a book that I think when I'm traveling, you know, it's a feel-good story. There's some other things, but it just, it's a feel-good story, and you want to hold on to it. It's beautiful, and it's like an illustration, like a TV or a movie. I could feel, I could smell. It's incredibly written. So introduce us to the Supremes sing the Happy Heartache Blues and give us an idea of what's going on with them.
Well, this novel begins 5 years after the end of my first novel, The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. And we find the three women at a slightly different place in their lives. And Clarice has begun a career, that the career that she had always wanted. She finds herself having this career, but she's also got one foot in the past and isn't quite sure how to proceed. And she finds herself wanting to go ahead, but still she's afraid. And she's reacting to that fear in an unusual way, shall we say. And then Barbara Jean has married the man she loved as a child, and or as a girl, I should say. And she finds herself, you know, she's another one, like Clarice, is she's in a position to have everything she always wanted. But she also has to recognize that she's still the same person she was. And she still had the difficult childhood she had always had. And she's finding herself that, you know, wondering if she can be happy if she knows what happiness means. And then we have Odette, who's finding herself at a strange place in her marriage. This marriage has been rock solid for years and years and years, and all of a sudden she's seeing a side of her husband that she's never seen because his childhood trauma has come back to step into his life at a time when he was not prepared for it. I should say also, as I describe all these difficult things, it's a funny book, you know. It's a lot of, I think everything I write tends to be a funny stuff about difficult things. And that's
Barbara
sort of
Jean's,
what I, that's what I do.
Barbara Jean's story in here was my favorite. When she's reliving all of these painful, sad childhood things, but then the stuff, like you said, the things that follow it and the telling of it and the things they go through as they're working with the nightclub performer and talking about Al Walker, it kind of takes, it makes it funny, but it's serious at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. I find, I don't know about you, but I find that the people I know who have survived really hard times, and I don't mean just gotten through them, but really survived them and really come through them whole, those people tend to be funny. They tend to be able to find something in their darkest moments. They tend to see some little bit of light, and they tend to find at some point a way to laugh. And that's a really, that's something that I have seen in throughout my life, with the people I know who have had it the hardest, they're also the funniest people I know. And so I find that myself bringing that into my writing, that when stuff is really, really tough, if these characters are going to survive, to me it's realistic to have it be a little funny.
It was. I mean, everything about it was. I think also in this book, the nightclub performer and some of their old enemies were quite interesting as well. And I also loved that each of the women had a connection to Al Walker, this elderly blues man.
Yes.
So talk to us about Al and what's going on with them and this whole connection.
Well, Al appears at the beginning of the novel to sing at the wedding of his old friend, as a man who appeared in the first novel, who owns a strip club that has become a rather fancy strip club, but it's still a strip club. And this his old friend is marrying the very strictly religious mother of Clarice, and he asked Elle to come back and perform this song that he loves, the song that's from the title, The Happy Heartache Blues, at his wedding. Elle comes back into town to do that and ends up stuck there. We learn, it's not much of a spoiler to say that because in the second chapter we learn that Elle is actually the father of Odette's husband, and his return opens up all sorts of old wounds for Elle and for James and for other characters also. They are all having to go back into the past and some stuff that they didn't want to bring up, but it's coming back up. And Elle's a tragic figure. He is, I think, not a bad guy, but he's a weak guy. And he's a man who has made some tremendous mistakes in his life and has not had the tools for whatever reason to be able to repair those mistakes. And I think it's a very sad place where he finds himself as an old man in this situation where he's got to look at all these mistakes he's made.
And I think that readers, one, if you are a parent, it makes you take a look at your relationships with your children. And if you are a child who's been distant from one of their parents, it makes you take a look. And maybe what you thought or you imagined or assumed things to be, maybe they mm-hmm. aren't. Maybe things are a little more three-dimensional, and it needs to be a conversation.
Absolutely. I find a lot of, you know, when you write something, you can't help but have your own thoughts and feelings and your own life creep into it. You just can't help it. And certainly this novel reflects my feelings as I age, and how I see the world now as a middle-aged man is very different from the way I saw it as a younger man. And I definitely see my parents very, very differently. I'm a lot more understanding and forgiving of my parents, you know, just being human, than I was when I was a young man. And I think for people who've had a hard way of, I didn't have a hard life as a child, but I think for people who had a hard life and had to contend with people who were deeply, deeply flawed, they're going through it much, much more. They've got to contend with loving people who sometimes treated them very, very badly, and trying to find a way to forgive or not to forgive, you know, trying to define forgiveness for themselves.
The fact that they're all trying to find their way back to wholeness is so clear. I mean, and I think that a lot of people will find themselves reflecting on their old relationships, a person that you spent your whole life with, you know, like Clarice thinking she found the perfect husband, but now she can't stand.
Yeah.
She can't stand the man. You know, she spent decades hoping he will become, now she can't stand him.
Yeah, so she has a man who is very handsome and very charming, and he was a philanderer throughout all of their marriage. Now he is ready to be fully committed, and she doesn't want him. She wants him in bed, but in no other way. Here's this guy who spent all of his life tracking down other women and getting them into bed, and now she's finding herself thinking, you know, I want him for that, but not really for anything else.
I love it. And I think other married or more mature women will really relate to Clarice. I mean, you get to that point in any relationship, sometimes things get a little comfortable, and you have to take a look at it. So I like it. Now, I think I want you to read from the book now if you can, because I want to talk about the writing, the behind the scenes of writing a best-selling book. So maybe we should just read a segment now and then talk about behind the scenes.
Okay. Well, let me see here. I have to find something that has no dirty words. But that's really most of the book, I swear. I'll read just a little bit. How about from a little bit from the beginning of the book? This is from a little section of the first chapter of The Supreme Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. And I should just set it up a little bit. Our main character, Odette, is sitting in a church, and she's listening to Elle Walker sing the Happy Heartache Blues for the first time. And she's having this strong reaction to it because her parents were both blues fans, and she's thinking about them, especially about her father, who really loved very sad and gloomy blues songs. Even though the song rumbling through the sanctuary would have been a bit dark for Mama's taste, she'd have loved the singer's wailing voice and the roller coaster ride of the melody. And she wouldn't have let this song go unnoted. If she had been in the church with me, she'd have turned to me and declared, "Odette, your daddy would have loved this song. Every single word of it makes you want to die. I got to write this in my book." My mother's book was a calendar from Stuart's funeral home that she kept in her pocketbook. The cover of the calendar showed a gray and white spotted colt and a small boy in blue overalls. They were in a meadow, both of them jumping off the ground in an expression of unrestrained bliss. Above the picture were the words, "Jump for joy," and below, "Happy thoughts to you and yours from Stuart's funeral home." Whenever Mama ran into something that she felt was remarkable enough to merit celebration, she wrote a note on that day's date so she'd never forget it. Mama's book first appeared on a Sunday afternoon about 10 years before she passed. We'd just walked out of our church, Holy Family Baptist, and Reverend Brown stood at the bottom of the front steps saying goodbye to his flock. Mama strode up to him and said, "Reverend, you're the best preacher I've ever heard. I've been thinking about your Easter sermon all spring. It was truly a wonder. It really opened my eyes. I want you to know you can consider this here soul 100% saved." Reverend Brown, who was more than a foot taller than Mama, bent over and took her hand. "That's so kind of you, Dora," he said. "I'm just doing what I can for the kingdom." "I mean it," Mama said. "You've won this battle for the Lord. And I wanted to make sure to thank you, since I won't be coming back." Reverend Brown hung on to Mama's hand and waited for her to deliver the punchline to what he assumed was one of her peculiar jokes that she was known to tell. But Mama wasn't kidding. She explained, "Remember how you preached that if we really wanted to be closer to God, we should look at the world around us and write down a little thank you to him for all the things he gave us? Well, I took your words to heart. And I've been doing that ever since." Mama opened her pocketbook then and pulled out a rolled-up wall calendar. She flipped 3 pages back to Easter and showed the pastor where she'd written "Best Sermon Ever" in a little square on that date. Then she showed him how she had jotted brief notes on each day of the calendar since then. "Reverend, you truly preached your behind off this morning, but just like you said, it's nothing compared to the way I feel when I'm sitting alone thanking God directly. So I'm taking your advice and skipping the middleman." Maybe I'll stop there.
I love it. And that sounds like my grandmother. It's like you knew her. I love it. So let's talk about a little behind the scenes. And that's a great intro into my next question. What was the hardest scene for you to write, the opening or the closing? Because it's kind of tricky to introduce people to take readers into another world. So which was the hardest for you to write?
Oh, definitely the beginning. Like you said, it's hard to get people to come into a world with you. There are so many reasons for them not to come along, you know. This world is around us is so complicated and so much is happening in all of our lives. So you've got to get people to step into another world with you, and you've got to give them a reason to stay with you. And that's a tough part. So the beginning has to work. And I reworked the opening of the novel a number of times. I wasn't quite sure where I wanted to start. And so when I settled upon starting with Odette, because she really is the main voice of both novels, and I decided to start with her and let her begin the story.
Have you ever been writing and felt like the book was, you didn't know where to end the book or to stop? A lot of my authors, first-time authors, the reason it takes so long for their books to go to the marketplace is because they will spend 3 years rewriting, adding, writing with this 600-page book.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever felt like you didn't know when to end it, or did it just end naturally for you?
Well, I have to play a little bit of a game with myself when I write. I have to think that I know what the ending is. I am a person who outlines and writes basic overall arc of the plot at the very beginning. Of course, where I end up often changes. I do the same thing for every short story I write, and I've done the same thing for both novels, and I've done the same thing for the novel I'm working on right now. But I have to feel that I know where I'm headed. Otherwise, it's too daunting for me, that there's too many possibilities. I have to tell myself that I know where I'm going. And by the time I've written enough that the destination is clear, it is often not the destination I thought I was heading for, but I still have told myself at every step of the way that I know where I'm going. So by the time I get there, it feels like it couldn't have gone anyplace else. But I have to tell myself that I know where I'm going. So I don't have that feeling. It's too scary to me to just begin and not know where I'm headed. A lot of people do that, and a lot of people do it very successfully, but it's not the way that I write.
I think if I was a writer of fiction, I would have to have certain elements. I would have to know my ending, and I could find and work my way to it, but I would have to have each chapter with something happen, because I ramble anyway. I ramble
well,
in
so
my
I.
email. I ramble on the phone. So I would be one of those people with a 600-page book. But
yeah,
thank God for editors.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I could go on and on and on. Certainly both of my books ended up being much shorter than they started out. I like to ramble. I like to tell stories. That's why I'm a writer. I like to tell stories. So there are all sorts of things, all sorts of asides that every character takes when they're talking. And when you're writing them, they always seem terribly important. And then later you realize, no, that just led people off to something else that they didn't need to know. So it's a lot of that. A lot of the writing process ultimately is, for me at least, taking stuff out that really didn't need to be there in the first place, but was a lot of fun to write down.
I want to thank you for not taking this book to a depressing place. A lot of times when we read books about people from a certain period or coming from a certain period, especially since these people would have enjoyed a lot of their lives in the 60s, we would have had to deal with a lot of civil rights and dealing with oppressors and all of that. Thank you for not engaging us and taking us and spending a whole book discussing these things, because, and this is why, I don't have a problem with people writing those books, and I promote a lot of those books, but I've always said there's so much more that happens in a person's life, and I want to read about everyday hardworking people and what's going on in their worlds, even when everything else in their environment is challenging, in the workplace and in the streets. How are they living? So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. That's so important to me. I feel, again, I have no problem with what anyone else chooses to write about. But for me, I find a lot of times when I'm reading books, especially books about black characters in difficult situations, whether it's the civil rights era or our current life, so much of it, to me, is not really about black people. So much of it is about black people reacting to the actions of their oppressors. And I want to write about the lives of these characters, not just what has happened to them that someone else has inflicted upon them. And to me, what the important thing is, what are these people doing when they go home? What are they saying to their partners, to their children, to, you know, to the people they love or the people they hate? That's what I want to know. I know a fair amount already about what has happened to black people at the hands of their oppressors. And I'm not at this point in my life interested in adding my voice to that. And I want to talk about the lives of people who are just trying to get through the day. That's fascinating to me.
And for me, too, I read a lot of books from all genres. So I read about the rich and famous, all the beautiful, skinny, lovely, amazing people. But I want to know what a mechanic's life is like and the good things. I want to know about a beautiful woman who's insecure, and even though she's rich and has everything, what's going on in her life, the reason she's not completely satisfied. This book was one of those books that I think a lot of new writers could use as a study in the craft of writing. Telling a good story, amazing. It was funny, and then, there was serious things, and then it make you take a look and reflect on your own relationships. A job well done.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I very much appreciate what you've done for writers. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. So, Band Radio Show family, we've been chatting with Mr. Edward Kelsey Moore, and you can find out more about him at his website, which is edwardkelseymoore.com. Mr. Moore, I love, love, love your website. It's so informative. It's a beautiful uplift, and you feel good visiting your website. So before we close the show, tell us about your professional music career and how those members of my magazine, Black Pearls Magazine and Band Radio Show, how maybe we could come and see you and perform.
Well, I play with a wonderful orchestra here in Chicago called the Chicago Sinfonietta, and it's an orchestra that was founded by a wonderful, noted black conductor, Paul Freeman, and it's the most diverse professional orchestra in the country, and it's a wonderful group, and we perform here in Chicago at Symphony Center and in the suburbs of Chicago in Naperville, and we'd certainly love to see any literature lovers in our audience. It's a fine orchestra, and I'm proud to be a member of it. But I've been playing for many, many years and hope to be playing for at least a few more.
Next time I'm in Chicago, I will definitely check and see if anything is happening on that calendar. I'd love to meet you in person. And get
oh,
my
same
book
here.
Signed.
I'd love to meet you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Moore, for joining us on Band Radio Show, and I hope you'll come back and hang out with us when your newly released book, the book that you're writing now, when it comes out, I hope you'll come back and hang out with us again.
I would love to. Thank you for having me.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Band Radio Show family, I often talk to you about giving the gift of knowledge. The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat, Book 1, and Book 2, The Supremes Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. I can't think of a better set of books to give as gifts. Think about the people, the sick and shut in, who need a feel-good story, who need something to laugh. Think about the people who may be in transition in their lives in halfway houses or hospitals or nursing homes or people who are in shelters. anyone in life that you think can be rewarded, please share the gift of knowledge by purchasing a set of the books and sharing with them. Band Radio Show family, if you have read either book or both books, please post your reviews on the online retailers at Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, Amazon, or wherever books are sold. You purchase your books online. My name is Ella Curry, and I'm the owner of BlackPearlsMagazine.com. If you go to the front of our magazine, you can read an excerpt from the Supreme Sing the Heart, the Supreme Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. That's book two, The Supreme Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. Book one is Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. So if you go to the front of Black Pearls Magazine, you can read an excerpt from the second book that just only been out maybe a month, The Supreme Sing the Happy Heartache Blues. I look forward to hearing from each and every one of you your reviews. Take time to share tonight's show with at least 10 people. Just think about the impact if every one of you put this on your social media, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, or you told 10 people, physical people around you about the book. Think about the impact we could have for Mr. Edward Kelsey Moore. Once again, my name is Ella Curry. I'm here every Monday and Wednesday night bringing new authors for you to meet and to support. I'll see you right back here next week with Kimberly Lawson Roby and a host of other fantastic authors. Bye-bye.